You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
All right, friends, welcome to the Inside the Locker podcast. My name is Ramon Ramirez. With me, as always, Elliot Fontanet.
What's up?
JC DeLeon.
What up?
Logan Urie on the boards.
Where's our music?
That's me.
Let me put on some tunes.
All right. Bear with us.
That's always one of my favorite things.
That's on me. I forget to put on the tunes. Shit. Well, I guess now the tunes are just kind of on. I kind of killed it. It's Girl Scout cookie season, y'all. And we have...
Actually, I think it just ended, but...
Yeah, I got that last shipment. I got that new.
Shit. I always be walking up to Girl Scouts like outside of Academy, and they're just
hey, you can get arrested for that.
They're always like, hey, you want some Girl Scout cookies? And I'm like, yeah, like as soon as I come out. And then I just go inside, and then I come out, and then I just... peace.
Yeah. Honestly, like, Girl Scout cookies... they're like the one thing that, like, I am not cynical about, even though I should be.
Yeah.
I'm like... Oh, Girl Scout cookies! I'm gonna buy like some. I'm gonna just leave these at work. I'm not gonna eat them. But yo, Girl Scouts.
That shit is so unhealthy, man. I just can't.
Yeah. I've actually managed the last 2 years to not buy any. I'll eat them when you put them in front of me, but they're not gonna.
Well, the funny thing is that when they start selling these, is right when people give up on their resolutions. And you can't tell me that shit's not on purpose.
That shit. That's the resolution killer. The Girl Scout. All right, so we have kind of a fun episode. This episode is called Versus. So, it's called Versus because we'll talk about this versus this and then just kind of break it down. Okay, this is the idea that we came up with. Okay, kind of a last-minute idea. I really don't want to hear it if you don't like it.
It's Ramon versus Ramon right now.
So Ramon, or Elliot, or JC, what inspired this
idea? Batman versus Superman.
Batman versus Superman, which you may or may not have heard of, is in theaters now.
And that's sort of a theme going on throughout media this year is like...
Hey, so who wins, Batman or Superman in the movie?
I tell you, nobody really wins. Yeah, and the viewer loses.
That's we all lose. You got to have... You're going to call Batman versus Superman, you need a winner.
Yeah, you're right. Nobody really wins.
It should just be called when Batman met Superman.
No. To be fair, spoilers. Batman is about to win.
Okay.
Okay, this is a big spoiler, but it's so absurd. Would you...
Logan, your muffs.
Go ahead. It's fine.
The only reason... Okay,
Also, spoiler for our
spoilers,
listeners.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Spoilers. Okay, so Batman is fighting Superman. He has a spear. It's a kryptonite spear that he's going to pierce his ass through the heart with it.
Pierce his ass through the heart?
Yeah. it's a weird version. It's
just like some Brazilian fogo de chao.
It's the Brazzers version. And like, okay, so he's about to stab him in the heart. And he's like, he's on the downswing. He's about to do it, and Clark goes, "Martha, save Martha!" And Bruce Wayne stops because he's like, "Martha, how do you know that name?" He's like, "That's my mom. That's my mom's name." And that's why he stops. I'm not kidding. That's the reason.
That's not that good, man.
That's the only reason he stops. JC, am I wrong? You love that movie, am I wrong?
I don't love
it. No, you like that movie, but am I wrong?
You want to marry it.
You love it.
And then on top of that, the only reason they fight, you would think from the trailers, it's like, oh, Batman's too rough.
And we opened the Pandora's box.
And was it? Superman's like, oh, I just still think you're too rough on the criminals. No, the only reason they fight is that...
It's because he stepped on his shoes at the club and he's all... Like,
you know what? Honestly, I'm not going to spoil, but that's exactly... It's no reason that they even fight. You're like... Wait a second, you're fine over that?
I hate it when guys step on your shoes at the club. You know? I hate it.
Mess up your whole night. You need some Air Force Ones.
Man, that's scuffing my kicks, man.
So spoiler alert, the Batman versus Superman, the heart of the beef there was that they were at the club. They were at the 40-40 club. Batman just be walking up on Superman and like stepping on his shoes. All right, let's get into some other... So Batman won that one. let's get into some other versus stuff here. All right, so we're going to do critics... versus fans. So this ties in with Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
This is a situation where, you know, in the internet age, reviews just don't matter that much because
really
it's not
don't.
A situation where you have like a week to see the movie and to think about it and then your review comes out especially with records, not so much with movies, because movie reviews always come out the day of the release, but the point is, you get to kind of set the agenda, set the popular opinion when you're a critic. Now, drops on Twitter, is it fire, is it trash, you know? So we're going to talk critics versus fans, but specifically talking about these DC fanboys that sort of preemptively defending Batman versus Superman.
Seen it. It's like, they take it personally.
So where are we at?
Well, there's the one absurd theory going around, and granted, this is probably the far crazy people or whatever.
The Trump wing.
But there are some fans who are convinced that Disney and Marvel are paying critics to purposely give this movie bad.
Man, where's my fucking check?
Oh, yeah. You didn't get your check?
I didn't get my check.
I was there when me and
Chris, I need my check.
I was there when me and Chris and all the guys got the check, and I was like, "Fuck your check!
Damn it!" Dude, I want my check. I want my $10 and my Disney store gift certificate.
Yeah.
I think Penny got your check.
But I'm curious, like, why is there a Marvel versus DC beef? I don't understand. Like,
because there are 13-year-olds that... It's the same shit with Sega and SNES back in the day.
Yeah, Sega, Nintendo, Xbox, and PlayStation Now. And,
people think you can't have both. Like, you can have both. Like, I like Man of Steel, and I like Iron Man.
Well, I can't afford both. Yeah. I can't afford both Marvel and DC.
Well, I mean, specifically to the critics versus fans thing, it's and this is kind of stealing a point from one of us.net colleagues, Richard Whitaker. Last night, he was asked this question when we did our first One of Us.show episodes, and he basically, said there are some movies that are critic-proof, like Batman vs. Superman. For example, right now, currently on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got some 30% rotten from the critics, but 74% from the audience. The role a critic plays isn't so much for a movie like Batman vs. Superman, but like a festival movie where one or two positive reviews that have great influence can mean the difference between a small movie getting distribution and not. For example, this week in Austin, the Draft House is playing a movie called Too Late. Too Late was a movie the director had been shopping it around for years. It's a really weird concept. It's basically a movie that's stitched together five single shots. Huh. And a 35mm reel is about 20 minutes. And so it's five 20-minute shots and five reels. That's the movie. At Fantastic Fest this past September, a lot of us really loved that movie and reviewed it as such, and it was the most positive buzz that movie had gotten, and now it has distribution, and now it's playing this weekend at the Draft House. If you have a chance, check it out. But yeah, those are kind of the roles that critics play. It's not so much for a movie like this.
I think to expand on that point, I think that a critic should be, here's what... A critic speaks for a particular voice, so like as a fan, you should know which critics speak to your personality and which don't. And if you're just following any old critic, then you're doing it wrong. You should be like looking and comparing what the critics say to what you perceive a movie to be, and see if it lines up at all.
Mm-hmm. But I think that is predicated on the notion that people are going to critics to say what's good. When it's a movie this big and it's this many emotions involved, people don't go to the critics to say,
"True,
should I go see this?" They're going to go see it regardless.
Yeah.
They go to see if people agree with them. And that's where I think that the anger is coming from, is that these people want the Batman Superman to be good. And I've seen, JC said something to me. We actually almost got in an argument right before the review, because JC was a little hot, because rightfully he had been seeing people like that have been waiting for this movie to suck. And like he was like, you want the movie second? I was like, no, I want this movie to be good.
Yeah.
And like, so you've seen critics come at it from, there are definitely critics, and I would say a good 40% of the critics are just trying to get clicks. Mm-hmm. They're trying to increase their YouTube channels through this, and they're just trying to write the most vitriolic article they can.
More than that, you have to have a hard position. You can't just be like,
you can't have
here's
nuance.
What I like, here's what I didn't like.
Right.
Like,
it's why I'd never be a good critic.
You have to position it with a really, like, defined point of view.
Yeah, and it's for 18 months I saw people kind of have, saying what they think it was going to be, and then sure enough, when the movie comes out, a lot of people saying almost the exact same wording, this was worse than I could have imagined. And it's like they don't understand the definition of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's a great point. I mean, you're right. Like, I've said this on the podcast for weeks, that this movie looks like shit. I don't like Zack Snyder's movies. But if I don't like Zack Snyder's movies, then
more fair.
But I'm saying, like, say you don't like Zack Snyder's movies, why are you reviewing this movie?
Yeah, like, how can you be objective is the thing. And it's like, then they have about 60% of the other ones who are like, well, I really wanted this movie to be good, and they're more disappointed. Like, our review, the majority were more disappointed than anything else. You had a few, I think, Richard was just like, Zack Snyder should not be making movies ever again.
Yeah.
He was more of the, I'm going to take a hard position, where like me, Chris, and then Christopher Herman, he writes for the site, man, he was sad. He was not even angry. He was sad because, like, to him, he loves these characters, and he wasn't even angry. He was like, man, they are just... It's like somebody took Batman out bat and, like, killed him. It's like that scene in Shawshank Redemption where the sisters get to Andy Dufresne, and you're like, ugh, this is something else.
Yeah, I never saw Shawshank.
Oh.
I saw the ending, but I just missed it. I know. I want to see it. all right, so...
Critics love it.
Critics think it was better than Forrest Gump that year.
That's interesting. No, but I think you're right. I think the critic has value. I think... like reading like somebody like A.O. Scott or Peter Travers like talk about Batman versus Superman, it's like, what's kind of the point?
Right.
I think you guys convinced me. I mean, I think a movie should be good enough to stand alone, stand up to any criticism. It should be good enough to your 5-year-old likes it, and your pretentious guy with glasses in Brooklyn can appreciate it, right? I think there's some transcendence in like movies like The Avengers and here and there, but maybe The Dark Knight, but...
Yeah, and...
Yeah, I mean, okay. Interesting point. Let me ask you guys this. The last question about Batman versus Superman. What do you think is the worst filmmaking thing about this movie? The baseline, like, I really don't like this movie, and this is why I don't like this movie.
You want me to take this one first?
Yeah, I've liked Jesse Eisenberg in everything he's done, and this is the first movie in which I haven't really liked anything he's doing on screen. And it's kind of a bummer. And I even like the character of Lex Luthor.
Yeah, he seems like a weird pick for Lex Luthor in my mind. I mean, like, it does not fit just from the clips I've seen. I have not seen the movie yet, but I'll...
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think the thing for me, beyond Luthor... Because, like, I feel like what my problem is that Luthor is a symptom of the problem I have with it. I just see such wasted potential in this movie. Like, you make... 3 decisions different, movie's vastly better. And you don't have to even reshoot anything.
What are those 3 decisions now that you brought it up?
You characterize Luthor different, one. You come up with... You don't have to even shoot anything different. Just come up with a compelling reason for Batman and Superman to be fighting.
Okay.
And then 3, you present the people, your cameos in a better way. Those 3 things, just barely any reshoots make this movie massively better.
Even from my point of view, like there are 4 or 5 dream sequences, all of them.
They can just
nothing
cut
to do with anything happening in the movie.
It's just fan winking. It's like, oh look, this will be cool to shoot.
Yeah,
I want Batman in a trench coat because that makes fucking sense. Yeah. He's in the bat suit in a trench coat in the desert. It's like he's gonna die a heat stroke. This is great.
Okay, well while we're on the topic, again the theme of the show, versus. Okay, versus. So it's this versus that, and then we just talk about the 2 things, right? Marvel versus DC. Where does DC go from here with its universe? It's obviously trying to create a film universe, follow that Marvel blueprint. Interestingly enough, I thought this movie was a big opening for DC because we've been living in the Marvel space now for 8 years, the whole Obama presidency, right?
Yep.
And we're kind of nearing toward the end of not Robert Griffin III, Robert Downey Jr. And
I know he's in Tropic Thunder, but damn.
And this was an opening for DC to really kind of be like the dominant thing, and maybe it still might be because this movie might still be a critic proof movie that everybody sees. So let me ask you guys this: if you're say you're Guillermo del Toro or like some hotshot director, and you can direct any one of these movies, any one of these projects, are you more excited to work within the Marvel sandbox or the DC sandbox, given what's in front of you?
You go DC. DC, like Marvel's formula is just that it's a formula. Like, and it's a successful formula, and it's a formula I happen to like, but you have a cap on your creativity with Marvel. Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, look, I want you to play within these bounds. You will not play outside of these bounds because these bounds make us fucking money. The critics like them well enough, and they're good films, and they treat our brand right. It doesn't mess up our IP. Whereas like DC, I think it depends on what platform you want to be on. If you want to be on TV, go do that with Marvel because they're going to give you a lot of leeway. But if you want to do it on a movie, go to DC, because DC is going to be like, okay. It's actually, it's odd. It's reversed.
So
like,
yeah, because to know the answer to that question from me, I would have to know the direction the two companies are going, because they seem to be receptive to feedback. And like from Winter Soldier, not so much Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy, but like you see, and with everything you've seen out of the Civil War trailer, you see the tone in Marvel
getting
a little darker. And I have a feeling that in response to Batman or Superman, DC is going to start to go a little lighter, which is also one of the reasons why I don't think Zack Snyder should handle the next couple movies.
He'd be a cinematographer.
And if that's the case, maybe Guillermo del Toro could have an interesting. He'd be something interesting for Doctor Strange, because Doctor Strange sort of has like.
Well, they have a hack riding it, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So outside of just creativity, like, you know, where do these franchises go from here? In other words, you know, you've told so many Marvel stories already. It's already a confusing universe that the more movies you put out, the more you assume that people saw the other product. DC, you have the luxury of having like all of these huge heroes that, on the one hand, every 5-year-old and older knows. On the downside, the story of Superman, the story of Batman has been told just way too much.
And Green Lantern was told badly. Mm-hmm. The Flash is already being told. Arrow has already been told. Wonder Woman was told a long time ago. It's like, you almost have to make it your own at DC, whereas Marvel's already established.
Yeah, I think to be blood, I've always been a little bit more of a Marvel fanboy, and not even a fanboy, but they were just who I followed.
Yeah, I mean, Marvel's in a place where they have to more figure out what they're doing in the meantime, whereas DC, even though they've kind of rushed into it, they're like, well, we're still sort of at the beginning with all of these characters. Like, we're setting the reset button, even on Flash.
I think that DC right now, what they cannot fall into the trap of trying to mimic Marvel. What they have to get adventurous. They have to experiment on their own. They need to do that.
I feel like they need to also. But then maybe it's just that the stuff they're doing fans aren't receptive to. But I feel the same way.
I don't think they need to copy Marvel. Like, I don't think they should make Batman and Iron Man. That'd be a mistake. But they should copy the approach. Like, you should give these characters the proper weight. Like, Wonder Woman should have come before Batman versus Superman. Sorry, I'm 12. Like the set photos that came out look amazing. Like Robin Wright's going to be in it, and like those set photos, like, I want to go see that. Like, I don't want to have to sit through Batman versus Superman. I want to watch Wonder Woman now. And so like if they can just take that, they don't have to even match the tone. If they can just say, hey, we're gonna give Cyborg his own movie. We're going to get a director that understands this character, that's a fan of this character, who's going to want to invest in it in a good way. Because like what Marvel does so well is the people who make their movies love those characters already. So Jon Favreau loved Iron Man. Joe Johnston. You couldn't have got a better person to direct Captain America, the first one, because it was set in the 40s. He had already done Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Like, you had Edward Norton, who loved the Hulk, who basically brought the Hulk back after Eric Bana had savaged it, and so did Ang Lee. You had Joss Whedon, who loves those characters. Like, you have to. So if they want somebody right, what they should do is they should just give their entire DC universe. They should give creative control to Bruce Timm, who did the Justice League series from like 2003, who did the Batman animated series, all those classics. Just give him creative control, and just let him make something awesome. Because like that's the paralyzing thing is DC is whipping Marvel's ass on cartoons. DC is amazing in their animated, and their TV is great too. It's just like, but they feel like they have this this thing that, like, I think they inherently think it's a kid's thing. So when they put it on a movie, they're like, this has to be grim. This has to be realistic. And it's like, well, you're messing yourself up, because the point of DC is like, these are the gods. Mm-hmm. These aren't street level.
Well, I think the problem with that is that Batman is DC's most prominent superhero. He's the most popular. I mean, like, Superman is kind of the most iconic, but Batman is the guy, and he is a bit darker. He is a bit more grim.
Yeah.
Whereas like Superman is supposedly kind of the direct opposite, and it seems like that's maybe not quite the case in the new movie. But as far as an overall character,
well, plus like one last thing is like Marvel actually is in a lot better footing than most people realize. because it's actually been a blessing in disguise. Because they almost went bankrupt in the 90s, they had to sell off all their properties, like a lot of their properties. All they were left with was Avengers. And so they've had to develop these minor characters into something bigger. Like Black Panther a few years ago, nobody really knew who he was outside of like black folk. Like I knew who Black Panther was. I was like, yeah, it's a black guy that's a superhero. Cool, we don't see many of those. But like they're going to make him a feature movie. But now they're getting Spider-Man back. That's going to be a Marvel movie. Sony's going to get some of that money. But I can guarantee you, X-Men's going to go back to Marvel eventually. And they're going to have a movie. They're going to reboot the X-Men. And that's going to be their next arc. Is going to be the Phoenix Saga with the X-Men, but through the Avengers taking part in that. Like, probably the third Infinity War type thing.
I dig it. All right, last question, because I'm just curious now. When are we going to finally have... And this is something that they've had to lean on, they've gotten criticism for... When and who, tell me that, when is one of these pivotal Marvel Avengers gonna bite the bullet?
I think in this movie. I think Tony Stark's gonna die in Civil War.
Ooh.
Because, like, they've been telling... Here's the thing. In the original Civil War comic, at the end of it, Captain America dies.
Spoiler.
Oh, sorry. You're right, spoilers. It came out 8 years ago, but it's a spoiler.
Still, because I just read it a month ago.
Okay. Marvel likes to play with your perceptions and what should happen. And if you watch the trailers, they've been directing your worry away from everybody but Tony Stark. Yeah. And it seems like... And the good thing in Marvel has is like they never want to kill anybody off, but they also want to keep these contracts under control. And Robert Downey Jr. makes the most by far of any of their actors, and they have a built-in out. And the Infinity Gauntlet can bring anybody back from the dead. It's that powerful, so they can kill Tony Stark, leave him dead for three movies, and bring him back in the climax of the second to last one, and he's in the last one. And that's an out it's an out that's built into the fabric of the story, so it's not cheap, but it is cheap. So it's like it's perfect.
No, I think that's an excellent theory,
and it's a way to not pay him for the movies where you don't want to make him the focal
exactly.
point. I like that. All right, we have to move on, but interesting discussion nonetheless. Okay, this is kind of an interesting one. So it's the end of March. We just finished South by Southwest. And I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about. I wanted to debrief a little bit about South by, but central question, right? South by Southwest versus fuck South by Southwest. I'll go first. Look, I think that South by Southwest Interactive is a giant, useless waste of time. There was a time when, you know, you could discover Twitter and you could discover big, huge apps. I think the batting average is pretty poor there. And I think what that's become is a lot of celebrity gawking and a lot of just kind of like pointless tech circle jerk stuff.
Oh yeah,
I feel like the opposite. I feel like that's swung even more into the music, and I feel like yes, you're not going to find maybe to the next Twitter, but like the point of Interactive is network. The point is to get to meet people and make these physical connections, these real life connections to these people in this online world. So to me, that's the real value.
I like that. And no, I mean, it's an industry conference, to be sure.
The new arena of it, of South by Sports, is interesting because it's sport. A lot of areas in sports are new in that analytics, the advanced analytics is sort of becoming a new thing. The way people are figuring out that and incorporating technology into figuring that stuff out, like all that stuff is sort of new. Athletes being more on the forefront of social media and social issues in general. Yeah. Like two of the panels I went to, one was about some of the effect of social justice and how accountable do we hold athletes and sports teams to, you know, things in the news. And another one was just simply called "Do Great Athletes Have to Be Good People?" And yeah. So I think in that area. In the interactive portion of South by Southwest, it's a new area that's being explored.
I definitely think that the most interesting conversations are happening during the interactive portion of that. Whereas,
That's interesting. No, I think I still think the interactive portion is just kind of useless. And
well, it's so much navel gazing.
Well, I don't want to take, because you're right, it's not fair for me to say that it's useless, because there's a lot of very real tangible value that a lot of people get out of it. But I do think that the fluffy crap is just kind of like hilarious.
Where Reddit pillow?
Well,
you degrades the rest of it.
But the music thing, I mean, to Logan's point, you're right. Like the era of coming here and like signing a band, like that era is over. But what you get in its place is the most vital and vibrant music scene in the world for 5 days, where everyone is just dumped into a downtown area. And it's, I mean, 6th Street has never been more diverse than it is during South by Music. And on top of that, you have these situations. You know, I was at the Palme d'Or on 6th. I went to a showcase that featured on the inside stage a bunch of rappers from Asia, and on the outside stage a bunch of rappers from Texas and Louisiana. And then you saw them just kind of hanging out with each other, and that's kind of what it's all about, and that's something that you can't really get anywhere else. You know, I saw a Japanese band called Wakagi Band, a 9-piece Japanese metal band playing with a bunch of like punk rock bands in a parking lot for like 90 people. Like, that's not something that you get to see anywhere else in the world. This is a band that sells out arenas.
The film portion has gotten a little bit different too, in the sense of, like you say, it's the music isn't really an arena sign. Independent bands, like, I found myself skipping a lot of movies this year because they're coming out in theaters very soon, and or they were purchased by Netflix and they'll be on Netflix in a couple months.
Interesting.
And so, yeah.
So less vitality for film, you'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for me, it's like, I didn't go this year, but I went the last 2 years. If there was one thing I could do to make South by Southwest better, it would just be I would make it harder to just set up and just have this thing that doesn't even relate to what you're doing, that just takes up space. Because you have a bunch of South by Southwest stuff that's not even related to the main stage or anything for networking or sports or music or movies. It's just like, we want to promote our product, so we're giving you a $10 Starbucks card if you take this survey. It just makes it look sort of silly. It's like, man, come on. Like, can't we make this a little cooler?
But, I mean, despite all that, like, if the debate is South by Southwest versus fuck South by Southwest,
Oh, no, you go for Southwest.
Every year I look forward to taking the entire week off of work and just walking around downtown.
I will say this. My only area where I say fuck South by Southwest is I think they don't take safety seriously enough. And this is a bit of a personal story. One of my friends died a few years ago at the Mohawk. And my position has always been, and it's hindsight, but fuck it, that Austin could install the barriers that retract into the ground. You know you're going to have this every year. You know the intersections you're going to have it at. Just install it, because like there was a guy, he was afraid of getting arrested or something. He ran past a barricade and killed a bunch of people. And South by Southwest never really took any kind of responsibility for that, when the entire culture of South by Southwest is, we want you in these long lines waiting outside of your venue, to where she wouldn't have been on the street if the lines were managed. She'd have been inside waiting for the show to start.
Yeah.
So it's like there's this culture of like non accountability, where we don't want to pay people to come to work at South by Southwest, because we don't want to have the people that would actually do that job. We want a bunch of young volunteers, so we're not going to pay them, but we're going to give them a badge.
Yeah, and they don't seem to have learned from that, because like Chris Cox wanted to go to the Vibe party, and the way in which you could go to the Vibe party was if you RSVP'd and took the time out of your day to go pick up this special badge. So he thought it would be easy to get in. It was still an hour and a half line just to get in, and so he didn't bother going.
But also, to be fair, a lot of those things, the Mohawk thing was an official event, but a lot of these things are not official events, and those are things that are within a limited amount of control.
Here's the thing. You can say, and I see what you're saying, you can say, this is not an official event, how can we know? But when you start profiting from those unofficial events, you become responsible.
Well, the city cracked down in the last 2 years since the accident that you alluded to, quite a bit on just giving out permits to whoever wanted one. In fact, they canceled an event this week, an outdoor Rihanna concert, because of the same reason. They just weren't. The city said, nope, that's going to be a little too chaotic.
I do know of a few big companies that were rejected because they just didn't turn in their applications on time, because South by did change all those rules.
Yep. All right. Let's move on. While we're on the subject of the city of Austin, Austin has been in a very heated and interesting taco war.
The taco wars
that
of 2016.
Obama appeared to settle when he flew to Austin and had some tacos.
At Torchy's, baby.
At Torchy's. I want to ask you guys, where do you fall on the Austin versus Texas taco war?
Where I fall in this is, San Antonio geographically and Austin is sort of in the center of Texas. People forget that there's a whole lot of Texas beneath San Antonio, including an area called the Rio Grande Valley, where I am from.
The Valley!
And
they got some amazing food down there.
I have grown up on some breakfast tacos my entire life, and so I think growing up in a town 3 minutes away from Mexico, I think we know how to make breakfast tacos.
Here's what I will say to that.
People have overlooked that.
The problem I have with that argument is you can... This is... I never thought I'd think about it like this, but the taco discussion...
Wow.
Is the discussion between the difference between San Antonio and Austin. San Antonio is classic. It has history.
Yeah, it's traditional. It's judgmental.
Yeah.
Whereas Austin is a shitty place.
Yeah. Austin is dynamic. It's up and coming. It's new. There's a bunch of the fusion going on. So you look at Torchy's versus some traditional taco place that the family has owned it for three generations. They're different products, but if your only attack against the new product is, well, it's new and it's not authentic, that's a losing argument to me. Because it's like, no, I want the thing that's doing new shit. I can go get a traditional taco down the road.
Yeah, it's New York City in 1980 going, hey, get out of here with your hip-hop.
Yeah.
You know? Look, I think you hit the nail on the head. The traditional taco is something that San Antonio does great. It has a great big population of Latinos, but it doesn't do any better than other parts of the state. All San Antonio does is play the game that everybody else plays, what Austin is doing.
That is true. I mean, I do give, as far as the two cities, I do give the edge to Austin because I can't, even in the Rio Grande Valley, I can't get an Ace of Spades taco like I can.
Yeah. Like, I can go get, like, they have a new taco every month, like the Scallywag, which is shrimp, pickled onions, mole, and queso fresco, and cilantro, but with, like, peach jam. Like, that's amazing.
I think the real answer here is variety is the spice of life. There's room in the world for every type of taco you can think of, pretty much.
And plus, there's some fucking high-skill jealousy going on in Texas these days. Like, Houston and San Antonio are always snapping at Austin, and it's like, man, y'all need to, like, fucking slow your roll.
Well, because Austin is the coolest city in the country. Yeah. And you know, I mean, it really is. Like, it's hard to say. Like, New York is going to be New York, but it's, like, slowly turning into Dubai. You know, like, D.C. is just about over because it had, like, an incredibly small art scene that had just totally, like, gentrified and priced out of D.C. during the Obama administration.
Really?
I drive for Uber on the weekends. Every weekend I meet at least six people who moved here from D.C.
Wow.
That's interesting. Yeah, but San Antonio is what it is. I went to San Antonio the Thursday of South By to see a Future concert. I went downtown, like, literally ample parking. Nobody was there. Nobody was there. Like, San Antonio is like one big giant judgmental suburb. And Austin.
That should be the name of this podcast right now.
Damn.
Austin is a place where everyone's moving to, and it has, like, some very big problems with gentrification.
Very big problems.
But
but
it also, right now, there's enough Austin left that the people that want to move to Austin want to be a part of something legitimate, authentic. Most of the people that come to Austin come from like dog shit Texas, where they can still, like, you know, where they can, like, come and, like, feel special and, like,
I moved here from College Station.
Yeah, that's
so dog shit Texas.
Same town, and, like, be and, like, feel like unique. Well, at the same time, like, there's a cynical danger to Austin. It makes you feel like you're in, like, Gotham or Metropolis that I think is, like, important to have because there's, like, this vitality. Like I said, South By.
Stuff is going on.
Stuff is happening. Stuff is legitimately happening. And so when we talk about tacos, we're talking about tradition that other parts of the state do that Mexico probably does a little bit better versus, okay, what does Austin have?
Or just differently.
Differently. What does Austin have? Austin has
life.
The breakfast taco is such a simple product that so many people have perfected. By the way, the biggest breakfast taco chain in Austin, Taco Deli, is owned by a man from Mexico City. So don't make it about race and class. the experimental tacos and the competition for tacos are what gives Austin the vitality and the edge and makes it a little bit more interesting, I would say.
Plus, like, you know, at any given time, if I'm bored in Austin, I can just, like, pull up my phone and say, I'm going to go to this show. I lived in Baton Rouge for 4 years, and I lived in Houston for 8 years, and lived in New Orleans for 10. Even New Orleans, you couldn't quite say that is easy in terms of stuff that you could really go to and feel safe. So, like, Austin has that rare combination of there's always something happening, and I can always feel safe when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hard to get.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think Austin's a special, interesting, unique place. And all of the things that bum you out, you know, like there's this thing called East Side Magazine. For those that don't know, historically speaking, East Austin is where they made all the black people go.
That's like the way they put them.
They literally drew up the city, they cut it in half, and they said, okay, black people, you can have your businesses.
We're going to be back in 50 years to take this land.
And now there's a magazine called East Austin Magazine that's like owned and operated by white people, and they talk about the East Side like it's this like weird, precocious thing, and it's just like, it just grosses you out. There's like, no joke, because I picked it up at an HEB, which is a grocery store for those out in Texas, and I opened it, and there's a picture of three white people smiling, and it says, East Austin, where everyone's welcome. Come on, you guys. Come on.
It's like, this is what privilege looks like. The fact that you don't even know why you're wrong.
And of course, they're all people wearing like the latest fashion.
The latest fashion and the fashionista stuff.
I'm surprised one of them isn't wearing like Indian face paint and a headdress. Like, just came from ACL Fest.
That's the thing with San Antonio. You know, San Antonio is an important city, and I'm glad it exists. But it is the boring older brother to
Austin.
It's
old money.
And the other thing to keep in mind, you know, it's a military town, so it's built into its DNA. It's baked into its DNA that it likes routine. It likes rigid structure. Now the one thing that a friend of mine pointed out who writes at the San Antonio Express News, if you go back and you look at the Austin Chronicle, like the city poll through the years, for the longest time, the favorite taco in Austin was Taco Cabana. Because Austin, for a long time, the 80s, the 90s, and early 2000s, was not an adventurous, exciting place for tacos. Mm-hmm. That's changed. All right. let's talk about – we got a couple of subjects here that I want to hit in less than 2 minutes because they're not exciting to me. One is Hillary versus Bernie. Is anyone here still excited about Bernie Sanders?
I think he's – honestly, I am not even disillusioned with Bernie Sanders. I'm disillusioned with people who like Bernie Sanders because they won't shut up. Mm-hmm. It's like – I'm like, look, you love Bernie Sanders. That is great. I loved Obama in 08, and I was probably annoying. But your man's losing, and now you just seem petulant. Could you just, like, let it go and, like, stop, like, acting like you're a Republican from 1995 and just bashing Hillary every second you get? Because, look, Hillary's not perfect. I agree. But you know what? It's going to come down between Hillary and Trump. And it's the choice we had between it. And when I was in third grade in New Orleans when Edwin Edwards was running against David Duke. Oof. It was like, do I want the crook or the man who literally might kill me? I'm going to go with the crook.
For those that don't know, David Duke, former KKK affiliated. I think he was like a grand wizard in the KKK.
Yeah. It's like, no, I think even if Hillary Clinton at the worst case scenario is a crook, I know she's not going to kill me. And I know she's going to like keep the ship running. So yeah, I want to vote for Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump.
Logan, where are you at?
I'm so bored of politics. I'm fucking over it.
I'm with Logan.
My answer.
I love it. I guess, yeah, I'll just say really quickly, yeah, I mean, I think the only way that the Democrats don't win the White House in November is if Barack Obama's voters decide to stay at home.
Yeah. I will say, if you do have an interest in politics and you're kind of jaded with it and you don't necessarily have one side that you're swinging towards, there's an excellent politics podcast called Politics, Politics, Politics.
Yeah.
By a guy named Justin Robert Young, which is awesome. And it's good. It's kind of doesn't focus too much on like Republican or Democrat. Definitely worth listening to and entertaining. Yeah. And it'll kind of open your eyes to some stuff.
I love it. All right, let's talk a new topic here. So, Alamo Drafthouse versus the world. In other words, again, this is a very Austin. This is the Austin-centric versus edition here. But basically, Alamo Drafthouse is a local chain. It was praised in 2005 by Entertainment Weekly
it's
as the
a decent amount of places nationwide.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. You're right. In 2005, it was praised as the top chain in America. Like the best place to watch a movie, in my opinion, it still kind of is, even though a lot of the classic Alamos have been torn down and rebuilt, and now it's, you know, it's a little bit more posh or whatever. But
it's not the same, but it's still
wonderful.
Yeah,
it's still
I
fun.
Absolutely love it. But Elliot, now you would rather go to like a Regal Cinema.
I think, and here's the thing: I'm partial. I worked at an AMC for 7 years, and so I have a big problem with people who say, man, I can't see a movie well at a theater. And I'm like, I know those people. They're people who usually make my night suck because, like, everything had to fucking be perfect. If there was a speck of popcorn on the floor. Well,
okay, but this is not about your personal experience.
No, but it is.
Or the in and outs of Regal Cinemas. It's about seeing a movie at the movie theater.
No, but that's the point. It's like, I'm not expecting, Like, when I go to a movie theater, my expectation is I'm going to go to the movie, I'm going to watch it, I might have some popcorn, I'm going to go home. I am not going to feel like I belong at that theater. I am not going to feel a sense of community. I am not going to eat a full meal. I am not going to watch cool little things that come on before. I think that's great once in a while, but there's this attitude, especially in Austin, you know, I sing its praises, but like that if you don't go to the Alamo, something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And it's like, all I want to go see is fucking Mortal Instruments, City of Bones, and Silence, and not be noticed in the theater because I shouldn't see this movie as a grown-ass man. I don't want to go to some special fucking event.
It is interesting.
I don't
how
think the Draft House played that movie. So I don't
think they did either. It is interesting, though, how like there is a real class divide even with movies in America.
Yeah.
You know, where because it's not just the Alamo, like every major city has some kind of like here is the cool artsy place to watch a movie.
Maybe the Arclight in LA.
And the real like the real through line to all of that in no way is it intentional, but the real through line to all that shit is that you don't have to deal with a bunch of rowdy brown and black teenagers.
I didn't even think about it, but that could be what's at its roots bothering me.
When I go to when I was living in D.C., there was, like, the East Street Cinema, which was the art house, which was downtown. And then there was the – in China, like, you would go to Chinatown and see the movie theater in Chinatown. And every movie, you know, like, every couple of months, you know, like, there'd be some petty crime there where some kid would get shot or something. But, like, that was the movie theater. And
some petty crime, like, some kid getting shot.
Hey, if you live in the hood, sometimes that is petty crime.
Sometimes some shit happens where someone gets shot. I didn't say killed.
It's a shot.
Sometimes
it's
like, get shot.
Sometimes that motherfucker deserves it. It's sometimes, like, what did you do?
He had it coming.
Sometimes what did you do?
Shot. And sometimes it's like, you know, there's a fight and like a gun goes off and it, and nothing happens, but like it, you know, shit happens. But the point is, like, that was the theater where we live. That was the closest theater to us. I saw movies like Inception there. I saw like a bunch of shitty romantic comedies there. But the point is, like, you go to those theaters and there's a lot of teenagers there, and there's a lot of brown and black teenagers there, and teenagers are going to be teenagers, and they're going to yell,
they're going to be teenagers.
But the fact is that, like, today in America, you can find ways to see movies without teenagers.
Basically, you can self-segregate in America these days.
Yeah.
I mean, all that
place is the Alamo.
Yeah,
you go to the Alamo.
All of that stuff aside, the Alamo, like, the projection, I think, is always better done than at like Regal. Like the other non-draft house theaters always make the projections really dark.
Yeah.
I don't really know why that is.
Like the Galaxy's always dark.
Yeah, but plus, I mean, the draft house goes out of its way to play old movies. Like I can't. True. I've seen way too many times, probably more than I should in my lifetime, I've seen Big Trouble in Little China on the big screen because the draft house plays it all the time.
Nobody loves film more than the draft house.
Yeah, and you're making a good point.
And it's
I don't have a problem with the Draft House so much as I have a problem with the Draft House's fans. Because, like, I love going to the Draft House
for,
totally, like...
I understand that.
I watched Princess Mononoke, the original Japanese sub version. I had never seen it. And there was a part that I never knew. Like, that's my second favorite movie of all time. That they changed three lines in the English dub that completely changed the villain. That make him a lot more menacing. And I would have never found that if not for the Draft House. So, like, I actually like the Draft House. I don't like its fans, if I can personify, because like I feel like its fans, they have this like elitist thing going on because they're so counterculture.
Sure.
That they didn't look down on you if you're just like, I just want to go to a movie.
Well, yeah, it is very much a douchey thing to be like, oh, you want to go see this stuff? But at the same time, I have uttered the sentence, I don't want to go see a movie unless it's at the Draft House.
I've done that too.
No, I've done it too, because like if it's opening weekend and if it is a teen comedy, I'm not going to go to a regular theater because I know what to expect.
Yeah.
But if I really want to see it and I don't feel like going to the Draft House, I'm going to make the sacrifice and go on a Tuesday night when nobody's going to be there.
Sure. But at the same time, it's like, I like the Draft House because I can go and take like an extended lunch break and go watch a movie and eat lunch and then, you know, come back to work.
Damn, what's your job, man? That sounds good.
But then I come back and work until 9 p.m.
That's kind of the point, right? To go to the Alamo Draft House, you have to be able to afford spending $50 on a movie.
Yeah.
And if you can't afford spending $50 on a movie, you're not going to go to the Alamo Draft House. And that's the thing. That's why, you know, it's impossible to sneak into the Alamo Draft House. It's very easy to sneak into major theaters.
Yes.
I missed that.
Which I've never done. Maybe I'm missing out on something.
God, I've snuck into hundreds of movies.
Man, after I stopped working at the theater, like, I just sort of knew the trick. So, like, I would just buy one ticket in the morning, and I'd just stay as long as I felt and just walk from theater to theater.
Oh, yeah.
I always felt guilty about trying to play.
Well, here's the thing. The theater doesn't make money off of those movies anyway.
Theater makes money off concessions. So as long as you're buying popcorn or soda, you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The movie theater. My God. All right, folks. That's going to do it. But before we get out of here, I have to say, Logan, you are going to be the greatest husband, the greatest dad. Logan is getting married.
I'm not.
Next week,
we're he's not pregnant yet.
He's flying to Hawaii. And I just want to say my congratulations on the wedding. Amber is a lucky woman. You're a lucky man, too. Amber's a very attractive woman.
Yes.
But you're both very lucky to have each other. And I am so happy for you, man. It's going to be such a special wedding.
I appreciate that.
If you're, at Logan, you're like, at Logan what the fuck?
At Logan WTF.
At Logan WTF. If you're listening, shout him out on Twitter and be like, hey, man, congrats on the wedding.
Send him a wedding present.
Send him a sweet dong shot via DM.
if you want, I am planning on documenting it a little bit on Periscope and YouTube, so feel free to follow along.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Have a beautiful weekend, and we'll see you next time on Inside the Locker, the dopest number one podcast on iTunes.